Intro, this is Prompted, Tech Talks. More information, not more opinions. Hard data, real-world examples, and expert perspectives on the technology topics that matter. Today we launch a new series, The Money Life Cycle. We start with the most ordinary financial act there is, tapping a card. 2 seconds at the register, a machine spanning the planet, about $1.57 skimmed from every hundred, and a war over every cent of it. Segment 1, Topic Brief. This morning, somewhere between your front door and your desk, you probably did it without thinking. Coffee shop, $7. You tapped your card or your phone or your watch, heard the beep, and walked away. Total elapsed time, about 2 seconds. Total thought given, zero. Here's what you didn't see. In those 2 seconds, your transaction was encrypted, tokenized, routed through your coffee shop's payment processor to a global network operating out of multiple hardened data centers, forwarded to the bank that issued your card, scored by fraud models, checked against your balance, approved, and bounced all the way back to the terminal in front of you. And the strangest part? No money moved. Not 1 cent. The money comes later. Days later, through an entirely separate process most people have never heard of. The scale of this invisible machine is hard to overstate. According to the Nilson Report, the payments industry's standard reference, cards issued in the United States were used to pay for $11.9 trillion in goods and services in 2024, a record. And accepting those cards cost American merchants another record, $187.2 billion in processing fees. For every $100 you tap, about $1.57 stays behind, split among the companies that ran those 2 seconds. That $1.57 is one of the most fought-over sums in American business. It's the subject of a $38 billion legal settlement that merchants are loudly rejecting, a bill in Congress with a presidential endorsement and furious banking opposition, a federal antitrust lawsuit against the biggest network, a $35 billion merger, and, reportedly, secret projects inside Walmart and Amazon to route around the whole system with their own digital currencies. Beep. So this episode follows your $7 coffee twice. First, the sprint, the 2 second authorization, then the crawl, the days long journey your actual money takes, and the anatomy of the fee it pays along the way. And then we step into the arena, because nearly every player in this system is currently suing, lobbying, merging with, or plotting an escape from one of the others. 2 seconds of engineering, $187 billion of argument. Let's open it up.
Segment 2, the landscape. To follow your tap, you need to know the cast. Four roles run this play, and most people can only name one of them. The first is the issuer, the bank that gave you your card and fronts you the money. That's the name on the plastic, Chase, Capital One, your credit union. The second is the acquirer, the merchant's bank, the company that signed up your coffee shop to accept cards and that deposits the shop's money. Third is the processor, the technical middlemen moving data between the register and everyone else. Often the acquirer and processor are the same company. And fourth, sitting in the middle of everything, is the network. Visa, MasterCard, American Express, Discover, the switchboard and rulebook connecting thousands of issuers to millions of merchants. The scale of the companies you've never heard of is remarkable. Per the Nilson report in April 2025, JP Morgan Payments became the largest acquirer of card payments from U.S. merchants in 2024, processing just under 41 billion transactions, narrowly passing Fiserv at 40.7 billion, with WorldPay third at 34 billion. Three names, over 100 billion taps and swipes a year, and most shoppers couldn't pick any of them out of a lineup. At the network layer, concentration is the defining fact, and a contested one. The sponsors of the Credit Card Competition Act, which we'll meet properly in Segment 4, state that Visa and MasterCard control approximately 85% of the U.S. credit card market. The banking industry counters that the market has more than 4,000 card issuers and no significant concentration at all. Both sides are describing the same system. Where you stand depends on whether you count the networks in the middle or the banks around the edge. And that definitional fight is, in miniature, the entire war. One structural distinction will pay off later, so let's plant it now. open loop versus closed loop. Visa and MasterCard are open loop networks. They issue no cards and hold no consumer debt. They connect other people's banks and take a small cut of everything that crosses. American Express and Discover grew up closed loop, one company acting as network and issuer at once, seeing both sides of the transaction. Open loop scales bigger, closed loop keeps more of each transaction and more of the data. Remember that split when we get to why a bank just spent $35 billion buying one of the closed loops. And one more, debit versus credit. They feel identical at the terminal, same tap, same beep, but they are legally and economically different products. Debit pulls your own money, credit borrows the bank's. Congress already regulated debit once. The 2010 Durbin Amendment instructed the Federal Reserve to cap big bank debit interchange, and the Fed set the base cap at 21 cents per transaction. Credit interchange, the expensive kind, the kind that funds rewards, has never been capped in the United States. That asymmetry explains a lot of what you'll hear in segment 4. The debit fight already happened, everyone's still arguing about who won, and the credit fight is the sequel playing out now. How did we get here? The card system is older than you might think, and each generation of it answered the previous generation's fraud problem. The modern card was born at mid-century. Diners Club launched the first multi-merchant charge card in 1950, and Bank of America's Bank AmeriCard, mailed unsolicited to entire California towns in 1958, evolved into the network that renamed itself Visa. The earliest cards were pressed through manual imprinters. Merchants called them knucklebusters, onto carbon paper slips. The magnetic stripe automated that in the 70s and 80s. The EMV chip, that's Europay, MasterCard, and Visa, the consortium that defined it, replaced the easily cloned stripe with a tiny computer that generates a unique cryptogram for every transaction. And the current era is contactless. The numbers tell you how fast checkout culture flipped. Per Visa's own disclosures, fewer than 1% of its U.S. face-to-face transactions were contactless in 2017. By fiscal 2022, 28%. As of the second quarter of fiscal 2025, over 60%. The tap conquered American checkout in roughly 8 years. Through all of that technological change, one thing has stayed strikingly stable: the toll. The $187 billion merchants paid in 2024 works out to that $1.57 per hundred. And as David Robertson, publisher of the Nielsen Report, put it in March 2025, over the last 10 years, the weighted average has fluctuated between 1.45 and 1.57%. A decade of chips, taps, tokens, and phones, and the fee band barely moved. Merchants look at that stability and see proof the market isn't competitive. The industry looks at it and sees a fair, consistent price for an ever-improving service. Hold that disagreement. First, let's earn an opinion about it by actually following the money. Where does your $7 go, and what happens in those 2 seconds?
Segment 3, Under the Hood. The sprint begins before the beep finishes. You hold your card or phone near the terminal and a tiny radio conversation starts. The chip doesn't just hand over your card number. It performs a cryptographic handshake, generating a one-time code that's useless if intercepted and replayed. And if you paid with your phone or watch, your real card number likely never entered the conversation at all. That's tokenization, and it's quietly become one of the most important security upgrades in payments. A token is a stand-in number that maps to your real card only inside the network's secure vault. So the merchant, the terminal, and anyone eavesdropping see a number that's worthless anywhere else. Visa launched the technology in 2014. In June 2024, it announced it had issued its 10 billionth token and said tokens now ride on 29% of all transactions it processes across more than 8,000 participating banks. When a breach hits a retailer today, tokenized cardholders often don't even need a replacement card. The stolen numbers open nothing. Beep, your transaction, amount token, merchant ID, a bundle of risk signals, leaves the terminal and races to the coffee shop's processor, which fires it to the network. This is where the scale gets hard to picture. Visa's network, VisaNet, runs across 7 independent data centers and, by the company's own figures from October 2025, handles more than 322 billion transactions a year, with capacity for 83,000 transaction messages per second. Treat the precise numbers as company claims, but the engineering point stands. This is infrastructure in the same class as the internet's backbone, built around a single question, yes or no. The network's job is routing. It looks at your token, identifies your issuer, and forwards the request. Now your bank has milliseconds to decide. Is the card valid and not reported stolen? Is there enough balance or credit? And the big one, is this really you? Your transaction gets scored by fraud models, weighing your location, your history, the merchant's profile, the time of day. Visa says its AI-driven defenses prevent more than $40 billion in attempted fraud annually, again a company figure, but the industry-wide stakes are independently documented. The Nielsen report puts global card fraud losses at $33.41 billion in 2024. And here's a number worth sitting with. The U.S. accounted for about 26% of world card volume that year, but nearly 42% of the world's fraud losses. The 2 seconds are fast, but they are not casual. Every tap is a small verdict reached. Your bank sends back a 2-digit response code, approved or declined, which retraces the whole path. Issuer, to network, to processor, to the terminal in front of you. Beep. 2 seconds, maybe less. And when the answer is no, declines have their own hidden economics. Some are correct. The card really is stolen. The balance really is empty. But the industry's quiet embarrassment is the false decline. A legitimate customer rejected by an overcautious fraud model. Tune the models too loose and fraud walks through. Tune them too tight and you insult your best customers at the register and lose the sale. Every issuer lives on that knife edge, and it's a major reason the fraud scoring arms race never ends. There's also a pattern worth knowing from the chip era. When EMV chips made counterfeiting physical cards dramatically harder at the register, fraud didn't disappear. It migrated online, where there's no chip to check. Card-not-present fraud is now the industry's leading concern, which is precisely why your online checkout keeps adding verification steps that your coffee shop tap doesn't need. But here is the detail that surprises almost everyone about an approval. Nothing was paid. What your bank actually did was place a hold, a reservation against your credit line or balance. As payment companies like Stripe describe it in their own documentation, authorization is a promise, not a transfer, and an authorization can sit open for days before the merchant collects on it. You've seen this yourself, even if you didn't have the word for it. The gas station that shows a $100 hold for a $40 fill-up, that's an authorization placed before the pump knows the final amount, reserving headroom and releasing the difference later. The coffee shop has your bank's word. It does not have your money. Now the crawl. That evening after the last latte, the coffee shop system batches up the day's authorizations and submits them for capture, telling the acquirer, "These sales are final. Collect, please." What follows is clearing. The acquirer and the issuer, with the network as bookkeeper, exchange files reconciling exactly who owes what to whom, transaction by transaction, fee by fee. Then comes settlement, the only step where money actually moves. Your bank transfers funds to the coffee shop's bank, and the shop sees its deposit typically 1 to 3 business days after you walked out with your drink. Settlement isn't even the end, because the system runs one final process in reverse, the chargeback. Dispute a charge, fraud, an item that never arrived, a double bill, and your issuer can claw the money back out of the merchant's account while the case is argued. For consumers, it's a quiet superpower, one of the strongest buyer protections in commerce, and a real reason cards beat cash for big purchases. For merchants, it's a cost center with its own fees and its own fraud problem. Friendly fraud, where a buyer disputes a purchase they actually made. Every protection in this system is somebody else's expense. Keep that pattern. It's about to become the whole story. And the deposit is lighter than the sale. This is the anatomy of that $1.57, and it splits 3 ways. The largest slice is interchange, set by the network's published schedules, but paid to your bank, the issuer. The network keeps a smaller cut called an assessment for running the rails, and the processor and acquirer layer their margin on top. Three tolls, one tap. To make it concrete, imagine a hypothetical neighborhood bookstore. This is an illustration, not a real case. A customer buys $20 of books, pay with a regulated big bank debit card, and the interchange is capped near a quarter. The store keeps roughly $19.70. Pay with a standard credit card at something like the average rate, and the total cost of acceptance runs closer to 40 or 50 cents. Pay with a premium rewards card, the metal one that earns triple points, and the toll climbs higher still, because premium cards carry premium interchange. Same books, same register, same 2 seconds. The store's margin on that sale just moved by a factor of two or more based on which rectangle the customer happened to pull out, and the store, until the rule change is now being fought over, has had little practical ability to say no to the expensive ones. Notice something about the biggest slice. It flows to your bank. That interchange revenue is what funds your 2% cash back, your airline miles, your fraud protection, the interest-free float between purchase and statement. When the fee fight gets framed as merchants versus faceless networks, keep this in mind. The largest share of the money in dispute lands at the bank whose card sits in your pocket, and some of it boomerangs back to you as points. One more thing, and it's the bridge to the fight. You never see any of this. The fee isn't a line item on your receipt. Merchants fold it into shelf prices, which means, as merchant groups never tire of pointing out, everyone pays it, including people paying cash. And as the banking industry never tires of pointing out, everyone also gets a system where a rectangle of plastic works in 2 seconds at nearly any register on Earth. Whether that trade is fair is not an engineering question. It's the question the next segment is made of.
Segment 4, the arena. The 2 seconds are engineering. The $1.57 is war, and it's being fought on 5 fronts at once. None of them is resolved. Here's the map. Front 1, the courtroom. Merchants have been litigating interchange fees against Visa and MasterCard for about 2 decades in a sprawling antitrust case in the Eastern District of New York. A monetary settlement, roughly $5.5 billion, was approved back in 2019. But the fight over the rules continued, and in June 2024, the court rejected a proposed rules settlement as not going far enough. In November 2025, the networks came back with a revised deal they value at $38 billion in relief. Swipe fees cut by a tenth of a percentage point for 5 years, standard consumer credit interchange capped at 1.25%, and new freedom for merchants to refuse specific high-fee card categories, including premium rewards cards. The networks call that meaningful. MasterCard's statement, smaller merchants will gain in this settlement, more acceptance choices, reduced costs, and simplified rules. Visa, in a securities filing, said the proposal would provide meaningful relief, more flexibility, and options to control how they accept payments from their customers. The merchant lobby calls it something else. Stephanie Martz, Chief Administrative Officer and General Counsel of the National Retail Federation. Once again, this proposal is all windows dressing and no substance. And if the courts can't fix this, it's time for Congress to take action. The Merchants Payments Coalition notes that a tenth of a point is a sliver against an average swipe fee it puts at 2.35% in 2024. Named businesses are filing formal objections. Hugo Boss's U.S. arm called the deal offensive to the very class it's meant to benefit, and the Convenience Store Association argues it locks merchants out of future antitrust challenges. The court's approval decision is expected in late 2026 or early 2027. Nobody on either side will predict it. Front 2, Congress, and Martz's time for Congress line was not rhetorical. In January 2026, Senators Dick Durbin, Democrat of Illinois, and Roger Marshall, Republican of Kansas, reintroduced the Credit Card Competition Act. The bill would require banks with over $100 billion in assets to enable at least one routing network besides Visa or MasterCard on every credit card, letting merchants shop for cheaper rails on each transaction. Durbin, Americans are struggling with everyday purchases like groceries and gas, and credit card swipe fees inflate those already exorbitant prices. Marshall, from the other party, in harsher register. The average American family is being ripped off by big banks who profit billions from swipe fees while hardworking Americans pay the price. Sponsors circulate estimates of $17 billion in annual savings and nearly $1,200 per family per year in swipe fee costs. Advocacy figures, worth labeling as such. The other side answered within 2 weeks. 11 banking and credit union trade groups, from the American Bankers Association to the Independent Community Bankers, signed a joint letter declaring that the Durbin-Marshall bill jeopardizes consumer protections, rewards programs, and access to credit, and that it does so, their words, all to benefit a handful of the largest merchants. They warn small banks lose, rewards shrink, fraud risk rises on cheaper networks, and vulnerable borrowers lose access to credit. And buried in this front is the question listeners feel personally. Who actually pays for your points? Merchants say premium interchange is hidden in everyone's prices, cash payers included, a regressive subsidy flowing toward rewards card holders. Banks say the subsidy framing is wrong, and that routing mandates would simply kill the rewards economy without lowering a single shelf price. And both sides argue from the same precedent, the 2010 Durbin Amendment, the debit cap we met earlier. Merchant advocates say it saved billions and proved fee regulation works. The Electronic Payments Coalition, the card industry's lobbying arm, counters that after the debit caps, 98% of retailers either failed to lower prices or raise them, pocketing what it calls a multi-billion dollar windfall, while free checking and debit rewards withered. That 98% figure is an industry claim, and merchant groups dispute it with studies of their own. A decade and a half later, economists still haven't settled what the debit regulation actually did to prices, which means the central empirical question of the credit fight is being argued with evidence both sides agree is contested. This bill is on its fourth reintroduction. It has a presidential endorsement, union backing, and fierce opposition inside the president's own party. No floor vote is scheduled. Front 3. The government itself entered the arena. In September 2024, the Department of Justice sued Visa, not over credit cards, but debit. The complaint, brought under the Sherman Act's monopolization provision, alleges that Visa controls over 70% of U.S. debit card payment volume and protects that position through de facto exclusive routing agreements with more than 180 of its largest merchants and acquirers. Contracts that, in the government's telling, pay the biggest players not to use cheaper alternatives and starve would-be rivals of the volume they'd need to compete. Visa is contesting the case vigorously, and as of this spring, it is grinding through scheduling disputes and discovery. Antitrust time runs in years, not quarters. But mark what it represents. The referee of American markets has formally alleged that the biggest toll booth on the rails you used this morning is a monopoly. Front 4. While everyone fights over the existing networks, one bank bought one. In May 2025, Capital One completed its $35.3 billion acquisition of Discover. And with it, Discover's payment network, one of only four in the U.S. market. For the first time in the modern era, a top-tier card issuer owns its own rails. CEO Richard Fairbank framed it expansively. This deal brings together two innovative, mission-driven companies that together are poised to deliver breakthrough products and experiences to consumers, businesses, and merchants. And he has spoken of building the network into a genuine competitor to the giants. Two readings again. The optimistic one, a third force at last, an issuer that can route its own volume could discipline Visa and MasterCard's pricing the way no lawsuit has. The skeptical one, it's vertical consolidation that makes a huge bank bigger, and nothing obligates Capital One to pass savings to anyone, which reading wins is, as of mid-2026, simply unknown. Front 5. The exit ramp. In June 2025, the Wall Street Journal reported, and the companies have not confirmed, that Walmart and Amazon, the two largest retailers in the country, are exploring issuing their own stablecoins, dollar-pegged digital tokens that could let customers pay in a way that never touches a card network at all. No interchange, near instant settlement. The exploration tracks the Genius Act, the stablecoin regulatory framework that advanced through the Senate on a 68-30 procedural vote that same month. Because regulatory clarity is exactly what a retailer would need before betting its checkout on a new rail. This front is the most speculative of the five. Early stage, unconfirmed, and consumer habits are a formidable moat. But notice what it shares with the other four. The merchants with the most leverage in America have moved from arguing about the toll to pricing the cost of building their own road. Five fronts. One question underneath all of them. In a system everyone depends on and almost no one sees, who decides what the toll should be? A court, a Congress, a regulator, a market, or a defection? Stay with that, because nobody has the answer. That's the last segment.
Segment 5. Open questions. A journalist's honest accounting of the card system ends with open files, not conclusions. Here's what nobody can tell you yet. Start with the settlement. Will the court approve a deal that the named plaintiff's own constituencies are formally objecting to? The last proposal died in June 2024 because a judge thought the networks could afford more. If this one dies too, the realistic outcomes are a third rewrite or an actual trial of a 20-year-old case, and nobody in the industry can confidently price either path. Second, does the Credit Card Competition Act ever become law? It has survived 4 years as the payments industry's most contested bill, endorsed by a president, opposed by much of that president's party, backed by retailers and unions, fought by virtually every bank in America. And underneath the lobbying sits an unresolved empirical question. When fee regulation arrived for debit cards in 2010, did consumers see lower prices or did rewards just die? Each side cites studies. The studies disagree. Until that history has a consensus reading, the credit fight runs on dueling forecasts. Third, what does DOJ Visa actually change? Antitrust cases against infrastructure move at geological speed, and remedies are where they get interesting. Fee changes. Forced openness to rival routing. The case could also settle quietly or fail entirely. The one certainty is years of discovery into exactly how the rails work, which may itself reshape behavior before any verdict does. Fourth, is Capital One discover the start of real network competition or just a bigger bank? Watch one thing, whether meaningful volume actually moves onto the Discover rails and whether anyone's prices respond when it does. And fifth, does the exit ramp ever get built? Stablecoins, pay by bank, whatever comes next. Every challenger to the card networks eventually collides with the same obstacle. And it isn't technology. It's you at the register, with 2 seconds of muscle memory and a wallet full of points you'd rather not give up. Convenience is the deepest moat in payments. Every previous card killer drowned in it. So the next time you tap, the 2 seconds will work. The token will swap in, the network will route, the models will score you, the hold will land, and the beep will sound before you've pocketed your phone. That part is settled engineering. Everything else, the toll, the points, the rails, the referee, is being fought over right now, in a courtroom in Brooklyn, in committee rooms in Washington, and in strategy decks inside the biggest retailers on earth. $1.57 per hundred, $11.9 trillion a year. The machine is invisible, but the money is not. So whose 2 seconds are they, really? And who should get to set the price of trust? Outro. Today, we followed a single card tap through the machine, the 2-second authorization sprint across terminal, token, network, and issuer, and the days-long crawl of capture, clearing, and settlement that actually moves the money minus about $1.57 per hundred. Then we walked the 5 fronts where that toll is under attack. A contested settlement, a bill in Congress, a federal antitrust case, a landmark merger, and the threat of merchant-built rails. 3 takeaways. 1. Authorization is a promise, not a payment. The beep is a reservation, and the money follows days behind. 2. The biggest slice of the fee funds your own bank and your rewards, so the swipe fee war is partly a fight about who pays for your points. 3. The system's stability is engineering, its pricing is politics, and as of mid-2026, every venue that could change it is in play at once. This is the first episode in the Money Lifecycle series. More hooks into the hidden machinery of money are coming. Thanks for listening to Prompted Tech Talks.